Today is the conclusion of our snapshot series. Actually, we call this one Snapshots 2 because we did a similar series last summer. By the way, next week we start a new series that essentially we're calling Reopening Questions, Truths, and Lies. So that's where we'll be headed next week. But this week, we're drawing a close to our snapshots. It struck me funny. I thought, well, maybe I need to explain to our younger folks what a snapshot is. Because it's not really used that much anymore for those of us who remember things like Polaroids, where you took a picture and it kind of ground out the picture for you. Just kind of like talking about a camera as a separate piece of hardware instead of just as an app on a phone. These are, I know, moments of antiquity for some of our folks. But we have chosen these past couple of summers to say we don't want to lose sight ever. And so on summertime, when people are going a million different directions, we want to keep the stories of Jesus in our minds and in our hearts, those special moments, those special encounters that Jesus had with individuals and small groups of people. And some of these folks that we see in the snapshots, it's very interesting. You never see them again in the Bible story. We don't know where they came from necessarily or where they went to most of the time. Many of these are just quick glimpses. The rich young ruler, well, we bump into him, he's on the scene, he's gone. All these different stories. And they appear on the scene, they have a life-changing encounter with Jesus that remains instructive for all of us here, lo, these thousands of years later, and then they pass from the scene. Now, there's nothing I can more highly recommend to you than for people to become deeply familiar with the stories of Jesus. As a former pastor of mine used to love to say, he said, if you want to know what God is like, take a long look at the life and ministry of Jesus. It will reveal most of what you need to know. That was his way of acknowledging that the scriptures have a bit of before Jesus story and they have a bit of after Jesus on earth story, but it's really about Jesus. We are Christians, Christians. We are of him, and that's what we're seeking to learn. So I express my gratitude again today, along with you, to God for the gift of his word, for the gift of his son, for the gift of the guidance that we receive for our lives by looking at the scriptures to see what they reveal about Jesus to us. Now, before we dive into today's message, too, I also want to say a quick word of thanksgiving and gratitude for last week to Pastor Paula and Pastor Jonathan and the worship staff and all those who planned and served as part of our special service of lament last Sunday. Had a couple people say, well, Pastor, we missed you. No. I'm sitting right over there. Sometimes a pastor, like everyone else, needs to sit themselves into a pew, be just a part of the people of God and hear God speak in different ways. And as we brainstormed together and prayed about the lament service, I knew they would give us a great leadership for that service. And I also want to kind of pick up on that service of lament and grieving that we focused on last week. To be very clear to everyone here and those, again, watching online, we understand that one service that focuses in a special way on hurt and grief and loss does not mean that all the hurting and grieving and loss is done, that it's all been processed out. The purpose of a service like last week is to help us acknowledge the losses that we have experienced and that making that a part of our life journey together and with God, as the Bible puts it, our pathway through the valley of the shadow of death. And it also expresses our commitment to walk with God, to trust him, and to walk together all the way through that valley as a family of faith. And actually, it was in reflecting on all of that that I felt led to this final snapshot of Jesus for today, for this summer, drawn from the 17th chapter of Luke, that fairly well-known story you heard a few minutes ago, his encounter with the 10 men who were suffering from leprosy, which means they were outcasts. They were the other, the others. They were living, let me think, how could we put this? Socially distanced from other people. They were in an imposed isolation. You know, I found a lot more to identify with this time around in studying this passage than I did in some other years. They had known significant grief and hurt and loss. They lost their relationships. Remember, they have to be away from people, separation physically from their families and their friends. They lost their occupations and their ability to financially support their families and loved ones because they could not interact with people. It doesn't matter what kind of business you're in. You can't be dealing with clients if you got leprosy. So they lost that. They lost spiritual encouragement and community because you couldn't go to temple. You couldn't be going into an enclosed facility with other people. Sound familiar? This is the experience of loss that they knew. They could not attend public worship because the health officials said they could not. It's their version of the CDC. You know, and telling them it's not safe for you all to be with these other folks in these places, with good reason. So even though we heard Luke 17 as Wynn read to us a few minutes ago, if you've got your Bible open, we're going to kind of walk through it today. We do this sometimes, other times we take a different approach. Today we're going to walk through. So if you keep your Bible open, verse 11. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. Now that's just kind of a throwaway line. You think, okay, that's what he was doing. Okay, well let me ask you this. He's on his way to Jerusalem. For what? He's headed to the cross. He's headed to Golgotha. He's headed toward what he knows will be suffering and pain. And even though that's in his future, he chooses to take a route that he knows is going to also have difficulties. He's walking along a route between Samaria and Galilee where it's sensitive, where it's easy to get bound up in a controversy. A place where Gentiles and Samaritans and Jews and lepers were all kind of mingling around within social shouting distance of each other. And verse 12, as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." Now, it mentions a village. It was actually one village out of a group of 10 that was in this area, small villages, which were referred to, those of you who know your Greek and stuff, the Decapolis, 10 cities, 10 social societies, 10 villages. Some people think that the identification of there being 10 lepers is just kind of a way of saying there could have been one from every single one of those places at one point. You never know. Could be you. That's the point, right? That's kind of the way this is playing out. And so these border towns, these villages that made up the Decapolis, they created problems for observant Jews because Samaritans were considered generally unclean. Not physically, folks. You mean ritually, right? Religiously unclean. And because the Decapolis hosted many Gentiles who were doing business with Jews and Samaritans and even lepers at times with food and those kinds of things, they were considered ritually unclean, the Gentiles, right? So a Jew had to be careful as he's making his way through here. And this leper population on the periphery of the urban centers, that's not uncommon in the Decapolis. So now you got all this mess going on, and Jesus decides to go through there when he's already got a full plate ahead of him. a full plate of difficulty and pain and suffering. But he chooses to take this route. And what's a little bit funnier, not funny, haha, right, but funnier, is that even though the Samaritans and the Gentiles were generally considered ritually unclean for the Jews, the lepers were even, this is not a word, but we've got to make it up for today, they were uncleaner. They were even worse. They had to yell out and warn people. They had to warn the Samaritans, the Jews, and the Gentiles that they were present so that they could maintain the ceremonial safe distance of 50 paces, a buffer zone. And you thought 6 feet was hard. 50 paces. That's all in Leviticus 13. If you're a Bible student, you can go and study that later. And then you come to their cry of mercy. Jesus, Master, have pity on us. And that really reveals kind of the multiple challenges created by leprosy for them. Leprosy was a big deal in Jesus' day for two really big reasons. There were a lot of other reasons, but two big ones. First, it was incurable in essence to them. They had no medical treatment. It would eat up your skin until that person eventually died. And probably from infections and things from all of the wounds that they could not get to close up. That was a horrible thing. But secondly, once you're diagnosed with leprosy in Jesus' day, you had to seclude yourself by living in a leper camp apart from the general population. Again, Numbers 5, if you want to go back and study your Old Testament teaching. You could not come into close contact with anyone. The lepers, it was on them to maintain safety at risk of great punishment. And on top of that, if you add this on top of it, leprosy was seen by the Jews in large measure as a type of sin, a result of sin. They would often try to imagine what it was that caused this divine curse to fall upon you, what you had done. And so they were relegated not only to the margins of cities, not only to the margins of society, but they were essentially written off as unredeemable. That's a word that you need to let soak into you a little bit, because that hurts. Unredeemable. Can you imagine the emotional, the physical, the spiritual pain of waking up one day? Your arm, perhaps, maybe your leg has been hurting a bit. You go to sleep that night. You wake up the next morning. It's an open wound. And you're trying to figure out why this, why me, why now? And you realize this could be the first sign of leprosy, knowing if that's what it is, you may well be on the road to never hugging your children again. Your spouse, your parents, those you love. Again, is this ringing any bells with the pandemic and the people through the glass, the inability to be with anyone and hold their hand except for the healthcare workers who stepped into the breach? I mean, wow. I mean, this ought to be, and the best you can hope for in life is that you'll be a good beggar and people will provide you enough food that you won't starve to death. I mean, this is pain at a pandemic level. Death by pain. So as a result of that, let's be very clear about something. These 10 lepers were not looking for sympathy from religious folk. That was not why they came after Jesus. They were looking for someone to do the impossible. They were looking for someone to change their lives, to transform them. They dreamed of restoration. Restoration physically, emotionally, spiritually, communally. Pick up on verse 14. And when he saw them, that's Jesus, right? He said, go show yourselves to the priest, which is how you were diagnosed as having been cleansed of leprosy in those days. And as they went, as they obeyed, they were cleansed. Now, I realize for most of us, we read this story, you might be thinking, I'm going to spend the rest of the morning here. No, because the miracle is what it is. Jesus did it. It's confirmed by their presentation to the priest. It's the real miracle of the story, but that's about all we have to say about it right now. We're going to move on. Pick up verse 15. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Okay, here we go. All right. Here we see the cultural tension in this Bible story beginning to surface. The fact that at least one of the lepers was a Samaritan. Imagine that. I know this is hard for you to imagine, but just think for just, maybe you need to close your eyes. Imagine a world where there is racial and ethnic tension. And if you can manage that, then manage a world where there's tension based on what part of the country you live in. Oh, and let's just go one more while we're dreaming, that those tensions spill over into their religious lives and how they judge one another. I'm sure that would never happen today. Can we say this is the story we are living? This is the story of us. Now, those of you who've been in church a while, this conflict between Jews and Samaritans, we've heard about it a lot of times. We know there was this tension there. Do you remember what it was all about? Why there were all these bad vibes between these two? Or just remember, there was a good Samaritan, which meant there were some Jews that didn't live up to what they should have. I can remember there's some stories about some good guys, bad guys. Why? Okay, so we're going to do a quick history class. Those of you who like this part of Bible study want to really ratchet it up. Those of you who don't, you want to get your YouVersion notes out so you have something to do to keep you awake while I'm talking about this very quickly. Okay, here we go. If you want to understand the split between the Samaritans and the Jews, you have to back up about 1,000 years before Jesus, when that famous king, no, not David, his son, which is called Solomon, remember? Okay, so Solomon dies, all right? And when he dies, his son takes over. He had that very common name we all love to name our children, Rehoboam, okay? And in 1 Kings chapter 12 tells a lot of the story. He becomes king of the 12 tribes. We remember there were 12 tribes of Israel, right? This is the basic history of Israel. And what we see in the story is that unfortunately, Rehoboam followed some young advisors into some bad advice. And he wanted some more funding for this. How do we say that today? He wanted to increase taxes. Okay, so he wanted to levy more fees upon people. He instituted some harsh labor practices. Unbelievably, they quit worrying about the employees. They only worried about the employers getting rich. I know that would never happen today. Okay, so here we go. And so all this is going on. And so what happens is, because he's located in Jerusalem in the south, the tribe of Judah, right, one of the really big tribes. So there are two tribes down south. The other 10 that are more northern break off. So now we enter in what is called in the history of Israel, the two kingdoms. And for several hundred years, you're going to have this division between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Okay? So that's split. And let's just take a guess. Did it make either of them stronger or did they both get weaker? Thank you. I got my employee answering. All right, somebody else. Did they get stronger or weaker? Weaker. Of course they did. They split. They divided. They were divisive with one another. So here's what we get. A couple of hundred years later, that's all it takes. This guy comes down from an area we call Assyria. The Assyrians come down. They conquer the northern kingdom, including Samaria. And they took many captives back to Assyria with them. But the way the Assyrians did it, they also left some folks behind to intermarry, mingle, and hopefully influence the people to become a more docile group under Assyrian domination. So this is all part of the about. And what's happening is when the Jews, who were a part of the northern kingdom, who were left behind, intermarry with the Assyrians, what have they done? They have broken the Old Testament law. And you can read all about that in Deuteronomy 7. They began to intermarry with their conquerors. Oh, to, To get along in the home, okay, you can bring your idols in from your religion, put them over there on the fireplace mantle, and you can do your little thing over there. And now you've got the mixing of the religions in amongst God's people, the people of Israel. This is a bad thing. So in Jewish eyes in particular, those of the northern kingdom, generally also referred to as Samaritans, not just the ones that were from Samaria, but oftentimes others. And so they are in this big problem. They don't trust them anymore. So later on, when it comes time to rebuild the temple, which had been destroyed, you know what the Jews said? We don't need your kind around here. Because the northern people wanted to help rebuild the temple. It was all the people of Israel's temple. But now the south thinks it's better than the north. They think they're more pure. And so they tell them, thank you, but no thank you. So when Zerubbabel, other leaders, the rest of the heads of the families returned from Babylon and wanted to take part, they were not allowed to take part. They refused to let those who were coming back from Babylon, those who come back and married Assyrians, all that kind of thing, can't participate. You want to look at Ezra 4? It's all there for you. So when you later read that the Jews and the Samaritans didn't get along, don't think that they had an argument about who put the fence post where. This is centuries of religious, regional, political, racial, ethnic division. And as the Jews advocated for Jerusalem as the holy city, the Samaritans said, well, you don't really welcome us to worship there. And by the way, we think Mount Gerizim is the better place anyway. And so now you have two centers of worship. So they continue to expand the divide between God's people. You can feel the tension. And one more piece, while the Jews generally accepted what we kind of know as the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, the Psalms and all of that, and then the prophets, the Samaritans only accepted the first five books as inspired. They actually rejected the idea of a Messiah coming from the line of David. I wonder why that would be, that they would deny that the king was the king. Well, because politically it didn't suit them, right? It didn't suit them because the line of David was from Judah, which was in the south. And if the north acknowledged him as the legitimate king, that was going to be a problem. They didn't have their axe to grind anymore. They didn't have their props. So all that's going on. I'm telling you, it is like reading American history in some ways. You see the mankind, the sin, the division, the judging one another. Boy, it's so instructive. Both groups blocked the other from worshiping together with them. Marriage between Jews and Samaritans was forbidden. Both considered the members of the other group to be religious heretics outside the true faith. So when Jesus comes along and he finds the one good guy to be the Samaritan amongst the lepers, man, that's just crazy. Who thought up making that dude the hero of the story? It means that their emotional and physical misery and the suffering that they'd been through from leprosy actually managed to trump the cultural and ethnic and religious divisions that they have found themselves in. And so the big question after you watch the story of Luke 17 is this: will Jesus, a Jew, show mercy to these lepers, even the Samaritan among them, despite the fact, those of you who know your Bible, you're in Luke 17, if you flipped over to Luke 9, you'd find they did not make Jesus welcome in Samaria. So Jesus could have just said, you know what, payback time, you turned your back on me, I'm turning my back on you. He doesn't. Jesus heals the leper, the Samaritan leper, along with the other nine. And then it turns out that only the Samaritan one returns. Look at verse 17. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other nine? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? And if you think that's wrong for Jesus to use that kind of language, understand he's making a point, all right? Then he said to him, rise and go, your faith has made you well. I mean, folks, this is remarkable. What a turn of events is going on here. while the other nine are on their way, right? They've gone to the priest. Now they're going to be going on to family. They're rejoicing, celebrating. They're about to be back in the community of people and of church and temple and their loved ones, all that kind of thing. Only one turns around and sought out Jesus to thank him. And since the Samaritan had been physically healed, he goes right back to Jesus the Master, and in great humility, he prostrates himself at Jesus' feet and thanks him with a loud voice. How ironic to think that at least some of the group had to be Jewish lepers who had been raised to thank and honor God for all their blessings. They'd been raised to do it, the Lord of the universe. They did not return to give thanks. But this Samaritan leper, who supposedly did not know how to worship God in an acceptable way, had not been to Jerusalem for all of the religious hootie-dootie and all that kind of stuff, he's the one who goes back to Jesus, the Master, to thank him. One who would not normally associate with a Jewish rabbi returns to give thanks. The other nine, let's think about it. They were so enamored of the blessing that they had received, they didn't have time to come back and thank the one from whom the blessing came. And in contrast, the leper recognizes that Jesus is unique. He has a unique power and unique identity. And so he comes back to Jesus, affirms him as that one with the power, the who he is, that personal relationship with Jesus is established. And so that's why we say it looks like nine were healed, but maybe only one really got saved. Only one really enters into the relationship with Jesus, something that would never fade, something that would never decay. But in addition to healing from his leprosy, he got a new heart, a redeemed masterpiece of God's grace. And I think, maybe you think differently, or maybe you can agree, and I think especially right now, after all the suffering and the isolation of the pandemic, we're like the nine just a little bit. We're caught up in the blessing of the healing. Thank God that's over. It's a relief. And we're so focused like they were. And so what am I going to do now? I've had to put off vacation. I've had to put off this dinner party. I've had to put off this thing at work. And now I can move forward and do what I want to do without having to worry about it. And so quick and so busy to move to the next thing that we do not stop to thank the one who made it possible. This week, I was listening. I heard a number of reports, several of them from NPR, but it was on Monday, July 19th, just early last week. Freedom Day. Did you catch the stories? Freedom Day in England. It was their day to end the mask wearing and the isolation and reopen businesses and all that. And they interviewed all kinds of people, and everybody talked about how ready they were to move on, or those who were not so anxious to move on said, oh, I still have a lot of concerns. I still have fears about moving forward, especially since the prime minister the day before had to re-enter isolation because he'd been exposed to a cabinet member who'd been exposed to COVID, and it was just a mess. And they said, now we're reopening, and this is what's going on in our country. And they were all kind of, they talked about all these different things, the pros and the cons. You can't make this stuff up, people. This is what's going on in the world. But here's the thing. In none of the interviews, and I probably heard six or seven, I didn't hear anyone say, I'm so glad to be alive to be able to have this conversation with you. I'm so thankful for God's protection to this point, at least. I didn't hear any of them say, you know, it's Freedom Day, but I really want to thank the people who were behind vaccine development and vaccine distribution. None of that. It was all about what I want to do next or what I'm afraid to do next. Here is the lesson, brothers and sisters. It's easy to get used to God's blessings and feel like we are owed something of an easy existence. Sometimes we're tempted to get angry and bitter when the Creator doesn't come through for us exactly the way we want on our command and in our timing. It doesn't provide the blessings we want based on our every whim and desire. We get distracted by the material blessings of this world. I'm trying to figure out what it is. What is it makes us like the nine lepers who are blind to the need and desire to express gratitude? How are they blind to our depravity and the healing and the miracle that God has wrought in our lives that we might just thank God? Thank God for His tremendous blessings. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." And here is the truth. Isaiah 43:21, God says, "My people, whom I formed for myself, will declare my praise." You want to know what we're free to do now that the pandemic is over? It's worship, praise, in ways that we're used to in community. Oh, I know we had services all through, but I'm simply saying, folks, this, our freedom that we are given, whether at home, on video, whether we're in the room, is to praise God and thank Him for His deliverance. Darrell Bach said, "Praise is important because it reestablishes our relationship with God on its proper foundation. Giving praise cleans out negative attitudes from our past that have wormed their way into our hearts. Worship calls on us to recount God's goodness, to give thanks, to give thanks." That's our freedom. Other things the Scriptures have to say to us, we have a future. Our future is to persevere and to prosper as God's people. I often said to you during the pandemic, the Word is full of encouragement. I want to remind you of a few of the places we turn to. Philippians 4:6-8, where the Scriptures tell us, be anxious for nothing. And people were so anxious. There's so many mental health problems still resulting from the pandemic. Wow. Another place in Scripture, James 1:2-4, tells us, even when tribulations come, we count it joy that God is with us and He is going to help us mature in our faith. 1 Thessalonians 5:18 says, in all things give thanks. These are the encouragements of God while we're going through these difficult times, just like the lepers went through their difficult time. And those verses that I just read to you are not a denial of what we did last week with the lament. It does not mean that you say, oh, everything's hunky-dory, everything's good all the time. That's not what these verses mean. They don't mean that we give thanks to God that people got sick and died. We give thanks to God that while that's going on, God's presence is with us, that we can trust Him, that we can know that God has a provision for us in this world and in the life to come. We know that God is going to work within us to heal relationships. How do we know this? Romans 8:28, for we know that all things work together for good to them who love God and are called according to His purpose. It also means, I thought of this verse and I want to just share it again today because we don't often talk about Job. But you remember Job, right? The one who suffered and lost everything. When he lost his family and his fortune, everything, and then his friends, oh, you got to love friends, came along and criticized his attitude of his faith, criticized his faith to him, and he said this about God. He says, you know what? Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. So it's crazy, and Job was actually being defiant. He said, I'm going to complain to God, but that's none of your business. I'm going to tell God what's in my mind and heart, but I know who's God, and I know who I can trust. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. He might as well have said, all things work together for good that love God. He might as well have said, give thanks in all things, for this is God's will for you. He knew what suffering was, but he knew the secret was abundant life, which is my last word for you today. Our fullness comes from the love of God. See, that's what Job discovered. That's what the leper, the one out of the ten, discovered. It's not about your happy circumstances. Full, abundant life comes from the love of Jesus. And since it's hard to say thanks when circumstances stink, we have to put the focus in and understand that the way to not be like the nine lepers is to learn to count every spiritual blessing we have received from the Lord. So that, as Ephesians 3 says, we can come to know how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Jesus. That's what the leper came to know. I hope that's what you have come to know. And my prayer is for all of us to understand that Jesus wants to meet us at the point of our need, to deal with that pain with us, to love us through, and bring us to a place where we can know that He has heard, felt, and understood our pain, and we can give thanks back to Him because He is good, and we are grateful.